This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shmuel Bet, chapter 18. David is now joined by tens of thousands of supporters and prepares for the battle with Avshalom. The group is divided into three camps under the leadership of Yoav, Avishai, and Ittai, respectively. David expresses a desire to join the troops in battle himself, but these officers object. They're concerned that Avshalom's forces will not even be interested in combat with the other soldiers and will just focus on targeting David if he's present. After all, getting David or killing David would end the conflict for everybody. It would mean loss, but defeat of some of David's soldiers, even thousands of them, wouldn't spell the end of the war. David agrees to stay behind, but he publicly orders his officers to deal gently with Avshalom. David's soldiers quickly gain the upper hand in the conflict, slaying 20,000 men. At one point, Avshalom is riding on his mule and his head is caught in a tree above. The mule continues walking, leaving Avshalom hanging from a branch in midair. One of the troops reports this to Yoav, who rebukes the soldier for not killing Avshalom when he found him. The soldier replies that he didn't feel that he could disregard the direct orders of the king not to harm Avshalom. In any case, Yoav drives three darts through the heart of Avshalom and then instructs 10 of his weapon bearers to execute him. Yoav then blows the shofar, signaling that the war has come to an end. Avshalom's body is dumped in a pit, covered with a pile of stones. The text emphasizes that he had no heir to continue the struggle after him. Ahima'atz, son of Tzadok HaKohen, wants to run and inform David of the news that the war is over. Yoav explains that since the king's son has died, these are not necessarily good tidings, and he should let someone else deliver the news. Yoav sends a Cushite to bring the news to David, and the Cushite leaves to fulfill his mission. Ahima'atz persists and again asks for permission to run ahead and share the latest developments with David. And Yoav begrudgingly allows him to do so, reiterating that this will be a thankless job in light of the circumstances. Despite the fact that Ahima'atz left later than the Cushite, he is able to surpass him and reach David first because he takes a shortcut. Meanwhile, David is waiting patiently for an update from the battlefield. The watchman observes first one, then two men running toward the gate, evidently coming to provide some information to the king. When David is told that the first to arrive will be Ahima'atz, he assumes that this indicates that the news will be good. He reassures David, Ahima'atz reassures David when he arrives that everything is fine, and he bows low to the ground. When David asks about the welfare of Avshalom, Ahima'atz claims ignorance. He says that there was tumult going on and he doesn't know exactly what happened with Avshalom. David is then greeted by the Cushite, who similarly declares that the war has been won, confirming the message of Ahima'atz. But when he's asked about the status of Avshalom, he says, may all the enemies of the king be like that young man, meaning that he's died, therefore breaking the news to David. And we'll see what his reaction is in the next chapter. Now, one noteworthy element of this chapter is the sudden swelling of David's camp. How did he start with a few hundred supporters, and now he has tens of thousands of troops? So one possibility is that, as Achitofel predicted, the rebellion's loss of its initial momentum really cost them a lot of supporters. People became skeptical, they became worried, they defected to David. Another possibility is maybe some of Avshalom's behavior, such as cohabiting with his father's wives in public, was not well received, and it caused some of his allies to move over to the other side. The sages explain that there's an element of poetic justice in Avshalom's death. He grew his hair very long to elevate himself, and it was ultimately the cause of his downfall. He got caught in the tree. The rabbis say that Avshalom was actually a permanent Nazir, and this is why he only cut his hair once a year. On the surface, it's difficult to reconcile the image of a devoutly religious Nazir with the base and aggressive tendencies of Avshalom. So where did the rabbis get this idea to cast Avshalom as a Nazir? Now, we must bear in mind that actually the status of a Nazir is itself pretty controversial in rabbinic tradition. A famous Talmudic story has it that Shimon HaTzadik, the great Kohen Gadol, would not eat of the sacrifices of any Nazirim, because he said that they generally undertook the vow in an insincere way to showcase their religiosity and piety, not out of genuine religious motives. The story, of course, goes on to detail a memorable exception to this rule. Avshalom, as a clever and crafty manipulator of public opinion, is portrayed as a Nazir, that is, someone who cultivates an outward image of religiosity in order to impress and endear himself to others. Avshalom is envisioned as a Nazir precisely because, generally speaking, a Nazir is a person who wants other people to know that he's devout, even when this is far from the case. Or I should say, he wants other people to believe that he's devout. We can well imagine that Avshalom, like many politicians today, was happy to take up the mantle of religious fervor and observance in order to win the admiration and trust of his would-be supporters. In that way, unlike Shimshon and Shimuel, who preceded him and were also Nazirim, Avshalom's Nazarite status undermined true Torah leadership rather than helping to establish and promote it. The former were Nazarites, meaning Shmuel and Shimshon were Nazarites because this allowed them to focus less on themselves and more on the needs of the nation of Israel and on serving Hashem. Avshalom, by contrast, used the institution of the Nazarite vow to draw more attention to himself. The complications negotiated by Yoav and Achimatz with respect to informing David of the outcome of the battle are symptomatic of a deeper problem: David's ambivalence about the war as a whole. On a national level, his responsibility and objective has to be to defend his crown and protect his subjects. However, at the same time, his attachment to Avshalom renders this communal victory a personal loss. This theme will be explored in a lot more detail in upcoming chapters.